It's a new episode of the Cinema Stories Podcast, the special summer podcast event series. I'm Lights Camera Jackson. Hope you're doing well. Thank you for listening. The anticipation is building. We are still waiting to return to indoor movie theaters across this country and across the globe with everything going on right now. So many movies are delaying releases, but we're going to try to look at the positive perspectives of all of this and remember the good times with crazy, fun, wild indoor movie theater experiences. I've been bringing on film critic colleagues and friends in the industry to talk about what happened in the past, what's going on right now, and the future of the movie-going experience. My guest on this episode of Cinema Stories is a good friend of mine, the contributing editor for DigitalTrends.com. He's been there for a decade with news, reviews, and interviews. He's been the editor of MTV News, columnist for Time Inc., Movies.com, Fandango, IFC, and a New York Press Association Writer of the Year winner. His contributions to Metroland, my good friend, Mr. Rick Marshall. Rick, how you doing?
Hey, how's it going, Jackson? It is great to talk with you. Especially, it's great to talk with anyone these days. I got to be honest, I've been so isolated. So yeah, I'm excited to talk movies with you.
Yes, I am excited as well. Rick, follow him on Twitter, at Rick Marshall. Been at Digital Trends for a decade with all the reviews and everything happening. First of all, how are you? How is the family doing?
It's definitely been interesting. You know, got a full house, kids, wife, everybody working from home. So, my normal remote working self has been a bit more crowded. Mm-hmm. My daily routine has been a bit more crowded. But you know what? It's given plenty of time to catch up on movies, watch stuff. And thankfully, there's been a lot to watch.
I know there has been a lot to watch when it comes to the worlds of television and movies, whether it's stuff on Netflix or Disney Plus or Hulu or you name it. They got all kinds of stuff that's been in the can that is coming out now. What has attracted you the most over these past few months?
Well, I have to confess, I've been watching a lot of the family-oriented stuff because, like I said, got two kids at home. So this is giving me a chance to really catch up with some of the family stuff that's come out. We've been watching Artemis Fowl. We watched that. I'm a big fan of the books.
Okay.
I'll just leave it at that. I continue to be a big fan of the books. And we watched a lot of the, like, Detective Pikachu, all of these movies that are sort of coming out, over the last couple of months that have been either rushed out to streaming or went straight to streaming. It's been kind of fun to see all of them instead of going to the theater. I miss going to the theater, but it's been nice to actually have these new big movies that I was looking forward to.
Yeah, and there's one coming to HBO Max very soon called An American Pickle, which stars Seth Rogen, and it's a Sony Pictures movie that HBO Max acquired to stream as of now in August. I know I saw you got an HBO Max puzzle when they launched, which, have you done that puzzle yet?
I have. HBO Max sent me a really, really nice package, kind of unexpectedly there. Out of the blue, I got this big package with a Game of Thrones chess set and a puzzle and some earbuds and popcorn and snacks and all that kind of stuff. That was a nice little surprise. I think it may have convinced me to keep HBO Max around for a bit longer, I have to confess. But I've also been impressed with the amount of movies they have on it.
Yeah, all the superhero movies, and they're keeping them on for the rest of the year, I think, at least, or several more months, which is a great decision. Plus, I mean, a lot of movies out there, but also television. Elmo is fun. The Elmo talk show is just...
I kind of love it. The Elmo talk show. And yeah, I love the superheroes movies all being on there. Even though they're not some of my favorite superhero movies, I love that they're there and I have access to them and can kind of look back and remind myself maybe what I didn't like about them. Or maybe at some point I'm going to look back and say, you know what, that wasn't so bad. And they made a smart decision to sort of extend all those films through December, I think it is. I feel like it was a bit of a bait and switch when they announced that all these superhero movies were going to be on there. And then we're like, we're going to take them off after a month. So I think they made the smart move there and avoided getting a lot of people really angry.
Absolutely. And release the Snyder Cut for Justice League is coming in 2021. Have you been one of these people that has been behind this thing since this whole buzz first started up?
I have not. And you know what? I am most looking forward to the fact that once they release the Snyder Cut, I will hopefully not have to hear about releasing the Snyder Cut anymore. You know what? I'm a Zack Snyder fan. I am a Zack Snyder fan. I've loved pretty much every movie he came out with up till the DC Universe films. Not a big fan of those. I don't think we needed a Snyder Cut. If anything, you know, I think hopefully it will reaffirm what I didn't like about the Justice League movie to begin with. So, you know, I'm curious to see. I'm going to watch it, but I don't know if we really needed that. And there's all that stuff going on with the fandom around it that I'm not a huge fan of. So, you know, I'm just going to be happy to have it out there and stop hearing about it.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Yeah, one movie of his that I've wanted to maybe try again over the years, Legend of the Guardians, The Owls of Ga'Hoole, the animated movie that he did in 2010. I remember when I saw it, and I just thought it was too dark and couldn't really get into it, but I'd be curious now, as somebody who's really into animation, if I would like it more 10 years later. Do you remember watching that movie?
Absolutely, yeah. And I felt the exact same way about it. I'm like, this doesn't feel super kid-friendly. Like, as I'm watching it, I'm like, this feels really dark and sort of depressing at times and a little bit deeper than I thought. But animated movies themselves have gotten a little bit more emotional and traumatic and really resonate with some darker, sadder aspects of, you know, what they're trying to get at with the audience. So, you know, I'm curious about the same thing. Now that you mention it, I haven't thought about going back to watch that movie, but that's a really great suggestion.
Yes, yes. Maybe we'll do that, and then we'll come back on something and we'll talk about it. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I'm like that one person who really liked Sucker Punch, so that says a lot. Like, I am a fan of Zack Snyder's films right up until the DC Universe stuff. Like, I went to Sucker Punch and actually liked it. So I am like one of those like two or three positive reviews that film got.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with being in the minority when it comes to movies that you love. There's nothing wrong with that at all. So right now, as of this recording, Tenet is scheduled for August the 12th. It could get pushed again. It may have gotten pushed between the time we recorded this and when you're listening to it right now. So many other movies, Wonder Woman in October. I mean, when you keep hearing these delays, I don't know. I think you get to a point where it's just like, you know, you just gotta go along with it. How are you feeling about all these delays?
There's no way they're going to have these movies. They're not going to restart movie theaters with Tenet. They have too much invested in that film, and they're not going to. It's not a test the waters film. This is a things have to be open. They have to have some expectation of what they'll get money-wise from it. I think that we'll end up seeing, you know, one of the smaller movies test the waters. Even maybe something as big as Bill and Ted or something like that. You're going to get a movie like that out first, I think, because I don't see Warner Brothers taking that big of a gamble on Tenet or any of its big films, to be honest. So, yeah, at this point, I'm kind of like, why even have a date for it at this point? Let's wait, see theaters, when theaters are going to open, and then set one after that. Because, you know, any date that Tenet picks, everything else is going to move out of it.
Correct. It's the Tenet effect. It has been happening these last few times with the delays. And I think it'll have to come to a point where it's just like, you know what? We can't rely on what Tenet's going to do. We just got to put something out, or we got to put it to VOD. And even with the Oscar delays now, you know, the Academy Awards got pushed back 2 months. I could see some movies that were intending on coming out this calendar year, after a while waiting and saying, you know what, we got these 2 extra months for the Oscars, let's stick something juicy in January or February while we can.
Yeah, January's typically been that sort of no man's land for films. Like, they just sort of like dump them out in January. But we could actually see some of those films that typically drop in December to have them fresh on, you know, the voters' minds. We might see them coming out in January now, which I think is going to be really interesting. It's going to make January a very interesting month for like critically acclaimed sort of like Oscar darling films, which is like, what, never happened?
Never, like since 1930 or something outrageous when they used to do certain things. Yeah, I can't believe it either. I don't know. It's how this award season will impact future award seasons and how that's going to go. But you just got to look at it, you know, 1 year at a time, I guess, when it comes to all of that. Obviously, you're a family man. You got a couple of kids. Are you a SpongeBob family?
My wife is actually a much bigger fan of SpongeBob than I ever was, to be honest. SpongeBob hit for me in that time just post, like, I wasn't actually watching some of those shows at that point. I was more of a, I guess, Mutant Turtles? I'm not sure, like, what I'm trying to find the generational touchstone for when I was watching shows. A lot of the animated series they were on, and SpongeBob never exactly hit with me, but my wife is a huge fan. So I think it's like this 4-year difference between us where she was really into it and it somehow missed me.
Okay. I grew up with it completely. It started the year after I was born, and it's one of my favorites. What they've done with the show over the years and the first couple movies has been amazing. But now, since one of the last episodes I recorded here for Cinema Stories, the SpongeBob movie was going to be one of these big summer films. And now Paramount says, you know what? We're going to give it to CBS All Access, and we're not going to put it out till early 2021. I guess that's good for families. I mean, have you taken advantage of Trolls World Tour and Scoob during this time as well? And would you do the same thing for SpongeBob?
I'm not sure if I would do it for SpongeBob, but I will definitely do it for some of the big films as we reach that point where we're expected to be seeing these and have an opinion about them. But there was such a weird point, like in that early March area, where we didn't know what movies were coming out, when they were coming out, where they were going to come out. And so there was this lapse time for about a month, 2 months, where I didn't see a lot of the big films coming out because I wasn't sure where they were going to end up. Once we sort of get back into a routine, I feel like I'm going to end up seeing a lot more of these, you know, $20 or whatever it is, see the movies instead of seeing them in theaters sort of releases. With Scoob especially and with Onward as well and things like that, I was sort of waiting until they came to Disney Plus or HBO Max or that sort of thing, because with me, as you and I have talked about before, I don't have the review a movie every week sort of push, where I'm more just sort of picking out certain movies to review. And right. I'm very excited though about this becoming the norm, where things will go direct to streaming. I am really excited about that because that makes it so much easier for me to get out being a father. I find it a bit more difficult to get out sometimes to the movies, to the theaters. So this is something I'm looking forward to, and I'm looking forward to taking advantage of more.
I think that you're right. I think this is going to really change the game. I was surprised that HBO Max got Scoob as quickly as they did, because it was on VOD on May 15th, and then all of a sudden HBO Max for June 26th, and then it'll be on DVD. But yeah, that's an interesting move, that waiting until it goes to a streaming service like that is a smarter play. I think families are going to take advantage of Scoob. It's like these movies are having two or three rounds, sort of audiences discovering them through all of these different release strategies.
Yeah, and all the different studios are taking kind of a different approach to how long we're going to leave it in VOD versus streaming. And I think in my case, I'm still sort of feeling out how long that window is going to be in between the VOD versus streaming. Disney seems pretty okay with pushing their stuff out pretty quickly to streaming, to Disney Plus. Some of the other studios have kept it in VOD for longer. Once I feel like we get a better handle on how quickly studios are going to move from that VOD to streaming, then it's probably going to decide which movies I see on VOD and which ones I see in streaming. But like you said, I thought Scoob went so quickly from VOD to streaming. Like, I didn't even have time to consider paying to see it on VOD before it was already out on HBO Max.
All right, so Rick, where did your love of movies and wanting to start reviewing movies and interview makers in the movie world, where did this all start for you?
Oh, I've been a huge movie fan and TV fan and just a big professional geek, as I've apparently been labeled from a young age. I grew up with comic books. I learned to read, reading, you know, Amazing Spider-Man comics and things like that. So that naturally sort of segues into, you know, sci-fi, fantasy genre stuff. I've always been more attracted to the fantastic films and movies and TV and all that sort of genres. For me, it was a pretty easy leap because I was already watching movies and TV, and then to be able to actually write about them. I came at movies from a journalist side, from a journalism side, writing about the news of movies and TV. And in doing so, I started having some opportunities to write more about them from the critical side. And I found that I really like doing it. Although for me, that's never been the sole focus, is the reviewing and criticism side. I'm a journalist at heart. I came from a newspaper background. So I like writing reviews, but sometimes I think, as you may have learned too over time, it's hard sometimes to appreciate films when you're viewing them too critically. And I like to kind of sit back and just watch them sometimes, without having to think about what my review is going to be. So reviewing has never been the sheer focus for me. I just like writing about movies and the process of making movies. I like talking to the people who make movies, especially visual effects. That's what's really fascinating to me. So, you know, I've always been sort of a sci-fi fantasy, you know, genre geek. And this is a dream come true to be able to get paid to actually write about this stuff.
Yeah, definitely. And I hear you. I had Amy Biancoli on the last episode of Cinema Stories, and we were talking about this sort of critic mode, this mindset you have as far as reviewing a movie, and can you be able to differentiate that from just sitting and relaxing and watching a movie? So, you know, good for you for being able to, you know, most of the time just kind of hopefully be able to enjoy the movie for what it is without wanting to dissect it so incredibly much.
Yeah, and I think that's why I like talking to you, especially at some of these films that we've attended together, is you kind of view them from a very, very, like, you've been reviewing so many movies every week, you know, you're going through, you're just churning through movies, and I kind of am able to sit back and like, I might review a movie this week, maybe I won't, I don't know, I'll do a lot of writing about movies and TV, but I don't know if I'll review one this week or not. Or, yeah, I didn't get to that movie from 2 weeks ago yet. And meanwhile, you're like 8 movies past that point by the time I talk to you. So I really like getting your perspective on it, because you have to go from movie to movie to movie to movie. And I can kind of talk to you and decide whether it's a movie worth seeing or whether I want to actually, you know, do some more writing about it later on without having seen it yet, because I talked to you about it.
Yeah. Well, yes, I appreciate our friendship and our conversations over the years and things, but you have a really cool specialty with what you've been able to do at Digital Trends, which is when the Oscar season comes around and the nominees come out for the visual effects category, you're able to interview pretty much all the nominees every year for visual effects, which is awesome.
Yeah, it's really great. I started doing this Oscar effects series, I don't know, probably about 6, 7, 8 years ago, maybe. And it started out, you know, it was the visual effects supervisors that I could get on the phone. I would talk to them from the, you know, from the nominees, and then put together some features about the other nominees from what I could find out there. And over time, it's become something that some of the studios and some of the visual effects studios in particular have taken note of. And now they actually contact me around award season once the nominees are out to see if we can set up a time to chat, which has been great because I've been learning so much about visual effects. I don't come from a filmmaking background, so a lot of my interviews over time tend to involve a lot of looking up the terms they talk to me about, because sometimes I don't know the hardware that they're using or the specific cameras, and then I have to kind of look up some terms that they used with me, and I'm learning so much about visual effects through these interviews, and I like that I can learn about the visual effects from that perspective, because I think that translates well to people who might not know all these hardware terms from the reading side.
Yeah.
From readers, they might not know what all these cameras are and what certain terms are. So, but they want to know how this scene was filmed or what happened behind the scenes here. I kind of love being that person that can talk to these Oscar nominated visual effects people and get that perspective.
Yeah, we're learning right along with you by reading your pieces. That's great. What do you remember? Which movie that has either been nominated or won the visual effects Oscar in recent years do you remember seeing in the theater and being blown away and saying to yourself, man, I gotta ask these people about these certain things?
First Man was a huge one for me. I remember watching that and just going, the visual effects in this are stunning. How did they do this? And then the more I sort of read up in preparation for the interview, even more, I was like, this has gotta win. This is amazing. This is an amazing film. Learning about the techniques sometimes that you don't realize when you first look at it on the screen, our visual effects is a big part of it. And I talk to a lot of visual effects supervisors, and we kind of go over the fact that sometimes the biggest parts of making visual effects are the things that viewers and the audience don't even realize are visual effects. Like, you know, they've done their job really well when they can't tell that you did anything at all. And it's sort of this unsung hero aspect of making visual effects, is they spend all this time doing things that no one realized was a visual effect. That's always fascinating to me, when I can look at something and go, how did they do that, and really try to think about it in my mind and have no idea how they did it, and then find out that it was something that was this massive project.
I remember you were one of the few people who predicted First Man would win visual effects, and I applaud you for that. Yeah.
I've had a pretty good record so far with being able to pick the visual effects winner. I'm pretty proud of that. I don't know how long that will go on, but thus far I felt pretty good about my picks in that category.
Yeah, I think you got visual effects. I kind of got animated short. I'm able to talk with a lot of the animated short filmmakers through Animation Scoop before the Oscars. So yeah, I like our specialties, what we have, and we do pretty good with our predictions around Oscar time. Rick Marshall is my guest right now, right here on the Cinema Stories podcast. Again, follow him on Twitter at Rick Marshall. Before we get into some of the movies we've been able to attend together over the years, I got to ask you, I mean, your name is that character from Land of the Lost. I mean, how often have you gotten that? And do you remember seeing the Will Ferrell remake when it came out in 2009 and your thoughts on that?
So not only was I able to see that film, but I interviewed Will Ferrell not too long afterwards for, an IFC movie he made a while back. And I can't remember the exact name of it. Oh, Casa de mi Padre, I think it was.
Mm.
And so I interviewed him for that. And when I walked into the interview room in the room where we were doing it, his rep announced, Rick Marshall, IFC. And all I hear inside as I'm coming around the corner is Will Ferrell saying, Rick Marshall, Will and Holly? Rick Marshall, Will and Holly? And I was like, yes, this has been the bane of my existence since your movie came out. And people are constantly saying, hey, you're named after that guy from Land of the Lost. And, oh, Will Ferrell played you. So yeah, I've been able to interview him about it. We took a great picture together. We laughed about it for a little bit. And it's funny because I told him, well, people always ask who would play you in a movie. And I've already got somebody who played Rick Marshall. So it's all said and done. And we had a good laugh about it. He's a great guy.
Good. Oh, that's nice to hear. I've wanted to meet Will Ferrell. Man, that's a perfect story with your name and with everything. That is as perfect of a celebrity story as you can possibly get, Rick. That is great. All right. So the first time I remember meeting you, I believe, was the screening of It Comes at Night, which was this 2017 horror thriller. Now, you were in New York City for a long time. How were you able to come back to upstate New York and all of that and then start up going to some of these screenings in the area?
My wife and I both grew up in the Capital Region here. So we had moved down to New York City for a number of years, worked down there. And then after our first child was born, we decided to move back up here because this is where our parents still live. I could work remotely. I had already been working remotely quite a bit. And so moved back up here and I continue to do what I've been doing. Some of my contacts from down New York City translated to the Capital Region, was able to start getting on the lists for up in this area, which, as you know, there isn't a whole lot of screenings up here. So one of the things I had to kind of give up in making that move was the 2-3 movies a week, at minimum while I was down living in New York City area. But it is what it is. We still get out to the movies quite a bit when we can. And I still get to hang out with you at the films, which is nice.
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember It Comes at Night. I also remember you were a part of The Shape of Water. Now, that was an interesting screening because it was a private critic screening. It was me. It was Jim Dixon. It was the security rep. It was the regular rep. And it was you. And it was a few guests and a few people. It was a rather crowded private screening. But as I was watching that movie, I liked The Shape of Water, didn't love it. I didn't think at the time that it was going to be the Academy Award winner for Best Picture. Did you think that as you were watching Shape of Water at that screening?
Absolutely not. I was very much a believer that the Academy would never go all in on a film like that. As much as I loved the movie, I thought it was an absolutely fantastic film. I thought that the fantastic elements of it were exactly what was going to make it not eligible whatsoever to be the winner in the end. I just didn't think the Academy would go all in on that.
I was a little surprised too. I thought maybe Get Out would win. I thought the momentum was going for Jordan Peele. But yeah, I like Shape of Water. It didn't get me emotionally. And my favorite movie is Beauty and the Beast. And this was sort of a lot like Beauty and the Beast. And yet it didn't fully get me, but it got you. And that's nice.
Yeah, absolutely. I love the film. But also I looked at it from that fantasy visual effects perspective too. For me, looking at it, I was just amazed with how well they did the merman. how well everything was done around that to make it believable and to make that character someone you can really empathize with. So that's what really got me.
Yeah, it is a really well-made film in terms of the craftsmanship. I will give it that because, yeah, the costumes, the visuals, the set design, the way he structured it. I'm not surprised that Guillermo won Best Picture, Guillermo del Toro. I was a little surprised or Best Director. I was a little surprised on the Best Picture win. But and then a couple of months later, we were at one of the first showings of Black Panther. which sometimes we meet each other, we go to, whether it's the Regal at East Greenbush or whether it's one of the malls, and it's like, hey, you're at this too. And I remember we were chatting about Black Panther afterwards, and I was like, yeah, I thought the movie was all right. I didn't think it would win SAG for ensemble. What were your thoughts on Black Panther initially at that showing?
Oh, I absolutely loved it again, but once again, this is my sort of genre, like, you know, my love for these types of films, superhero, sci-fi, fantasy. These are the ones. This is my bread and butter. I loved Black Panther. I was surprised that it actually won for ensemble. I wasn't like shocked, but I was surprised because I thought that it had a lot of momentum, but I wasn't sure how far that momentum was going to carry it. It had a lot of buzz, but sometimes buzz only goes so far when it comes to, you know, critical awards. Sure. So I agree. I absolutely love the film. I'm glad that it won everything that it did. It's one of those pleasant surprises sometimes when films really win all these awards that you sort of weren't sure they were going to win, but it would be nice if they did just because of what it says about movies in the industry in general. And that's kind of the way I felt with Black Panther.
Yeah, and then about a week later, we went to a screening of Annihilation. Now, this is a movie I wish got a lot more awards play because it was one of the best films of that year. Let me set the tone for this. It was a Landmark Theaters screening that they had advertised basically saying, hey, anybody in the public can buy these tickets and go to this screening on the Wednesday night, the night before Annihilation was going to open in theaters nationwide. I got a couple tickets. I told you about it. You were able to go. It was you and I believe your father-in-law. And we ended up being the only two people, the only two sets of people there, two of only four there at this public screening. That's got to be rare for critics to be the only ones who go to one of these kinds of screenings.
Yeah, that was really disappointing too, because I love the movie as well. This is another one of those ones where I read about this film and I read the plot of it, saw a trailer. I don't think I even saw a trailer at that point, actually, and went out and got the book. And I read the book beforehand. That happens with a lot of movies for me. I kind of hear a plot synopsis and think it sounds interesting and then end up reading the book. And sometimes that works to its favor, sometimes against in some cases. But I agree with you completely. Annihilation was amazing. I remember sort of getting up after the movie was done and just thinking about it on the ride home and talking about it and just dwelling on it for a few days afterwards, like all the different very complicated themes that it was addressing. Yeah. And I agree, that movie should have gotten so much more attention than it did.
Yeah, Natalie Portman, fantastic in it. The psychological aspects of it. I have not watched Devs yet on FX on Hulu, but I am a big Alex Garland fan through Ex Machina and Annihilation. I think this is even better than Ex Machina. But yeah, that night was also kind of weird because we were the only ones there. And if there were other people there, and all of a sudden the movie wouldn't start. The movie, they would not get... The
movie. I forgot about that entirely, that the movie would not start. Yes, we had to sit there and wait for it.
It took them three times. They even put up the you know, Landmark Theater's little intro before it gets going, and we were crossing our fingers. I remember after, I think, the second time, the woman came into the theater and was like, well, we can give you tickets to another movie if you want, or you can sit here and wait. And I remember you and I going, no, we're gonna sit here and wait until we know for sure if the movie works or it does not work, because we need to review this.
I remember telling my father-in-law, it's not usually like this, I swear. This isn't the way they usually are when we do these. Because that was his first time attending anything that was, you know, early screening or, you know, a certain, you know, with critic colleagues and things like that with me. So I was like, yeah, it's not usually like this, I promise.
Yeah, they even showed us a whole batch of trailers just to buy time of other movies. I remember that. But then they got it up, and once the Paramount logo came on screen, it's like, yes, thank you. Thank you very much, because I knew I had to see other movies that week, and thank you very much for that. In the past couple of years, when we've gone to some critic screenings, ones that they invite us to, but also the studios decided to do a lot of these nationwide pay screenings, where you'd either buy the tickets on Fandango or you get them through another service, and it's a week early or a night early or something like that. One of the ones I remember seeing you at was Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald. And this was one where they gave away some posters, they gave away some other stuff. What are your thoughts on why they needed to make this second one and if a third one is really necessary? I'm not so sure.
that whole series is a bit confusing for me because I didn't read the Harry Potter novels. And right now I'm sort of going through some of the novels with my daughter, which has been really enlightening because there was stuff I didn't understand in the original Harry Potter franchise that I'm sort of realizing now, starting to read the books and such. But the Fantastic Beasts franchise, especially with the second one, went really deep into the mythology and the lore surrounding it, which came off a bit confusing to me because I didn't have the frame of reference to relate some of the characters and make some of the references that they were sort of putting out there in those films. And with this franchise, they're going to have a third one because it's the Harry Potter world. They're going to have it. The big question is whether they're going to have all of the key players in front of the camera and behind it, given all of the sort of scandals and controversies and things like that seem to be plaguing this franchise right now. Who would have thought that like the Harry Potter franchise would be surrounded by scandal like at this point in it? But who knows? I mean, it's your guess is as good as mine as to when we'll see that and who will be in it.
Right. You got the J.K. Rowling controversy. You got the Johnny Depp controversy. And then you got the fact that the second one didn't make as much money as the first one, which is a financial controversy. So yeah, I'm not so sure what's going to happen with that either. I'm really not. And they build that night as this sort of Harry Potter fan event. If you're a diehard Harry Potter person, we need you to come and see this screening earlier. Remember that? They did a little overkill with that, I thought.
Yeah, they kind of went all in on to the point where I was like, am I okay here? Like, I'm not being a person. I'm a muggle here. I'm definitely a muggle.
We were sitting a seat apart from each other at Shazam. Warner Brothers did a screening of that on a Saturday afternoon, a couple weeks before it came out. Shazam was one of my least favorite movies of 2019. Your thoughts on Shazam?
I felt very conflicted on it, and I also was not a huge fan because in my review of it, I thought that it wanted to be two different movies, and it was two different movies that would have been very good independently, but when they tried to mash them together, it became really confusing and jarring. At one point, it's, you know, a horror movie at times, and it's a very intense sort of horror movie at various points in it. And then other various points in it, it's this slapstick 13 going on 30, you know, kid in an adult's body comedy movie. And I felt like it just kept bouncing back and forth between those two, you know, tones so much that I didn't know whether to laugh or be scared or be like, or feel tense, like at different points. And yeah. I thought independently each of those two types of films were done very well, but together they just didn't work.
The mishmash, and they were marketing the film to kids, and I felt like that was a huge mistake because there's a lot of adult language in this and a lot of violence and really dark and so unnecessary for them to try to do that.
Yeah, I still haven't shown it to my kids because there are some things that I don't feel entirely comfortable in a film with, you know, that they're watching. That says a lot about it because it was marketed entirely for kids. And the trailers, my kids saw the trailers and thought it looked like a hilarious movie. They wanted to see it. And then after I saw it, I was like, we're going to wait on that a little while.
Yeah, good decision. One of the films I know you were so looking forward to, and I was so glad that the folks at Fox Searchlight were able to bring a screening to this market and have it, was Jojo Rabbit, which won the Academy Award for Adapted Screenplay for Taika Waititi. I know you're a big fan of Taika. We were texting in the days leading up to this screening, hoping and making sure that you could attend this screening, and so glad that we were able to make that happen.
Oh, man, I am a huge fan of Waititi. I love his stuff. I love his stuff going back to, you know, we got What We Do in the Shadows. We got, you know, The Eagle and the Shark. Like, all of that stuff with Jermaine Clement and that whole New Zealand crew, I am a huge fan of. So when I heard about this film, I knew I had to see this. And I am still very much in your debt for making sure that I could attend this film because this was huge for me. I was looking forward to this, and I'm so happy that it panned out to be exactly the sort of film I hoped it would be, and I am so happy that it won awards. So thank you, Jackson, too, for making sure that I got there.
You're welcome. Yes, we were texting and going, well, it's going to start at 2, but the theater wants to start it as early as possible because they don't want to bump anything, so we even started it about 15 minutes earlier or so. I hoped you would be able to come, and I'm so glad that that happened, and I am so glad that Scarlett Johansson got nominated. Personally, I think she should have won Supporting Actress for her performance. I think it was the best Supporting Actress work of the year and the best work she has ever done, and I told that to Taika when I met him at Critics Choice in January, I said Scarlett was fantastic in this movie, and he was thrilled with her work as well.
Oh, absolutely. She was absolutely fantastic in it. And, I, you know, that was one of those movies where I was so looking forward to it. It had so much potential to not work out. Like, that could have gone off a cliff in the worst way possible, and he just managed to pull it off. Like, he hit it out of the park. And I was so happy about that, because there's nothing worse, I'm sure, you know, than having a movie that you're looking forward to with that much passion, that much excitement, and then get to the theater and it just totally falls flat and you don't know what to feel when you're walking out of the theater.
Listen, if Mary Poppins Returns was a disaster, it would not have been a fun day. Roman Griffin Davis is going to be a star based off of that movie. And yeah, I mean, I thought the first 20 minutes or so with the comedy, it wasn't quite getting to me, but when it takes the dramatic turn, it just soars for me from there. Like, the first third of the film, it's like a C or so, and then the rest of the movie is like an A minus to me. It's when he takes that dramatic turn, Jojo Rabbit is fantastic, and it's coming to HBO. Are you going to watch it again when it's on HBO in August?
I probably will. I have seen it now probably four times, maybe five times. Whoa. So yeah, this is one of those movies where, you know, I watch in the theater for the critic side of things. And then when we get a screener, you know, an award screener in, my wife is in Screen Actors Guild, and I get my own screeners for things. So when screeners come in, I'll watch it again with her. And then somebody else I know will be, you know, will mention the fact that they haven't seen it yet. So I'll be like, oh, we should totally watch this. Come on over. We'll make sure that we see this. I want you to see this movie. So I watch it again. And this keeps happening over and over. And family members will mention they haven't seen it yet. And I'll be like, oh, hold on, I'll bring it over, we'll watch it together, and then we'll talk about it. And I love talking about, like, movies like that with people, too. Like, there's movies that you can really chat about for a long time afterwards, and I think that's a really important factor. And I kind of use that, too, in determining whether or not I think a movie is going to do well in award season. If it's something that you watch and then end up talking about with different types of people so much, you know, that conversation is probably happening in the awards circuit, too.
Yeah. Now, your wife, if I remember correctly, was in the voting committee, the nominating committee, one year for SAG Awards. Is that right?
Yeah, for the TV side. Yeah, they pick, they randomly assign people or ask people to be on the voting committees for either movies or TV, movie or TV sections. And I think a few years ago, she was on the voting committee for the TV side. And that was nice because we got so many screeners of everything when that happens. We already get a lot of them between stuff that I receive and stuff that she receives. We already get a lot of screeners. But that year, we had mountains of them. We could have built a fort with all of the TV screeners, because you know they always come in these massive packages because they're giving you so many seasons of a show.
Yeah, it is kind of amazing. I've been waiting one of these years to either be for TV or for film to be in that nominating committee. I've been in SAG for about a decade. Maybe this is the year. I hope maybe, because that would be an awesome opportunity to be a part of that. Now, you have emailed me a couple of times over the last few years and been like, hey, I'm going down to New York City today to Solo, A Star Wars Story, Ready Player One, Avengers Endgame. We were texting the day Avengers Endgame tickets went on sale, and people were waiting for more than an hour on Fandango to get tickets, and then you got the opportunity to go down to New York and see these movies. I mean, that must be an exciting, crazy day for you to take the trip to New York and see a movie you're so looking forward to.
Yeah, it's got to be a big movie. It's got to be something I'm really excited about to make that 2.5-hour journey down to New York City, then end up, you know, going to the theater, to sit in the theater for 3 hours, you know, three and a half hours if you're, you know, you're waiting in line beforehand, and then to do 2.5 hours back up to the Capital Region here. Mm-hmm. That's if a movie is good enough to justify that trip, then I know I'm going to be writing a very positive review about it. Mm-hmm. And maybe with the exception of Solo, which I was sort of, you know, I liked but didn't love, thus far, all of my trips to my day trips to New York City for early screenings have produced some really good films, have resulted in some really good reviews of films I really, really liked and have watched many times, you know, many times over after that point. So Ready Player One is one that I absolutely loved because I loved the book. And I realized that, you know, that one's gotten mixed reviews. But that was probably the biggest one where I was really excited to go down there to see it, was cheering while I was watching it, and then just had a smile on my face for the whole 2.5 hours back because I loved it so much, which I know is not the popular opinion sometimes of that one, but it worked for me.
I love Ready Player One. It was in my top five that year. With the exception of T.J. Miller being in it, I think Ready Player One is a pitch-perfect film. Spielberg, the fact that he made that and The Post simultaneously, I mean, just throw him Oscars. Just give them all to him. I mean, the fact that he was able to do that is incredible.
Absolutely. And I love that Ready Player One included a lot of stuff in it that wasn't in the book. So there were some surprises, and the stuff that it included that wasn't in the book hit, and it was great. And it wasn't just tacked on to be different. It actually served a really good purpose. So I was cheering during that. I had a smile on my face the whole way home, 2.5 hours all the way back. I even wrote the publicist afterwards and said, you know, hey, This was worth the 5 hours in a car that I had to go through to see this movie. So thank you.
Yeah, cool. Nice. We've gone to one of the local cinemas, the East Greenbush Cinema, a lot over the years, and have seen each other. And I've told you and have mentioned on this podcast already that Paul Blart Mall Cop is one of the only times that it has ever been sold out at that theater. The other one I can think of is Wonder, which was the Jacob Tremblay, Julia Roberts film from a couple years ago, Friday night. Packed opening weekend, and I tweeted, I said, look, if you've got predictions for Wonder for the box office this weekend, double them or triple them, because this film is going to do a whole lot of money. What do you remember are sort of the crazy, wild, or packed screenings of your years of going to the movies, or anything outrageous that has happened?
Well, you know, in terms of packed screenings, a lot of the ones in New York City were almost always packed. So it was hard to gauge things by how crowded the theaters were in New York City, being what it is down there, being how crowded it is and how populated it is. But I totally agree. When this little theater that you and I go to is crowded for something, you know that means something, because it's never crowded. Like, one of the things I love about that theater is I can show up 5 minutes after the movie's start time and still be guaranteed to get a seat, most cases, right in the middle of the theater in prime viewing location. And I just miss a few trailers and can come in and just waltz right in, sit down. It's great, except for those big movies. And I, you know, always make sure to come early for like a Star Wars or a Marvel movie or things like that. But yeah, there's been a few of them where you and I have shown up and how is this packed? This movie, really? and that's been a great indication. And those movies have almost invariably done huge numbers.
And it's funny, that Regal has not had reserved seating. I think it will have to start having reserved seating when it comes to everything from here on out. I think it's going to have to, as far as where you put people in the theater. I hope we get to a point where we can just show up 5 minutes beforehand, like the old days. But, I mean, what are you feeling now as far as wearing a mask and having to come in and maybe avoid the concession stand or things like that? What do you anticipate when you go back to that theater for whatever movie it is? What do you anticipate that experience being like?
Well, I'm definitely holding off for a while on the theater experience. I feel like the fact that AMC and Regal and Cinemark and such sort of announced that they would be opening again, but they would only require masks, you know, in the areas where they were, you know, legally obligated to do so. That was sort of a signal to me that they might not be taking it as seriously as I would hope. Even though they reversed course within 24 hours, I'm going to be waiting to see how things go in the theaters at first. I know there's going to be a lot of changes, but you know, given how risky this is and having, you know, family members and such of various generations who, you know, be more at risk, I don't want to risk it. I love movies, but one of the best things right now is this whole streaming revolution where you can kind of see these movies not too long afterwards in the streaming side. I kind of want to see how that plays out, because it's not worth risking a life at this point. And I want to see how the theaters handle it. Like, just opening one seat in between you and the group next to you isn't enough in my mind. I think they need to do more than that, and I want to see how they're really going to be handling it, and I want to see a couple of weeks into the theater reopening and see, you know, what science tells us about whether or not it's safe before I even consider going back to the theater. And it's hard to say that, because I love going to the theater.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see whether it's the Russell Crowe movie or whichever the first semi-big movie is, how it does week one versus how it does week two versus how it does week three. Do the numbers go up? Do the numbers go down? of how people are feeling. It'll be really interesting. But yeah, I agree with you that I cannot believe the timing of this streaming revolution being right now. The fact that within the past year we have had Disney Plus and HBO Max and Quibi and all these other ones, you know, Hulu and Netflix and Amazon still in play and CBS All Access. The fact that many have started up or are existing still right now during all of this for members of the press is kind of unbelievable.
Oh, yeah. And it's made screening movies easier, too. I mean, a lot of these studios that have movies they want to put in front of the critics and the press and such, they now have this sort of vehicle to get them out there in an easy format. I mean, I don't know how much you've encountered this, too, but in the past, they've sort of had some problems with getting screeners to us. Like, if it's not sent out on a DVD or Blu-ray or something like that, they go through these weird sort of third-party access to their screeners and third-party ways to view their things that can be problematic depending upon how tech-savvy you are or what, you know, hardware you have in your own home. And now so many of these studios have. Disney has Disney Plus, you know, and Warner has HBO Max, and they can kind of make them available to you in these new ways that are so convenient. I think we're going to see them making them available that way a lot more and a lot earlier than we used to get screeners, which would be really, really nice. And I think it would help us help them in a lot of ways.
I agree with you. Peacock too, NBC Universal, it starts up on the 15th. They're going to have new shows. I know a lot of animation shows for families out of the gate, but they're going to have some movies down the line, I'm sure, soon. And it's been interesting. The studios, they would sometimes send out links, but sometimes it would be difficult for some studios to send out links of semi-big releases, not necessarily the indie movies, but now watching Disney movies in our home, Walt Disney Pictures films in our home is kind of crazy.
Yeah, who would have thought that? Like, yeah. They've been one of the most difficult sometimes to really, get access to and early access to, because for the most part, their movies sell themselves. So that's a simple fact of it there. But you know, I love that Disney Plus now we can tune in there and see these films. This is great. We have early access. We have easy access to them. It's a real changing of the guard in some ways, and changing of the traditions in some ways that is happening, I think, at just the right time, given everything, you know, that's happening around us right now in the world.
We were able to see each other at New York Comic Con this past October, which was so fun. I had been there the previous year just for the Spider-Verse preview, but this was my first real year at New York Comic Con experiencing so much of it, and it was so fun. It was great to see you. And what do you honestly think? Do you think New York Comic Con is all virtual for this year and beyond, or do you see going back to the Javits Center within the next couple years?
I think this year is pretty much done for most of the big conventions. If they're smart, they're not going to do that because there's so much liability there in crowding that many people into a small space. But I think we'll see conventions making a comeback next year as once they get a handle on this, depending upon, you know, vaccine availability, things like that. I think we're going to see it. Right now, you know, they already have this Comic-Con at home thing going on where they're going to go virtual with San Diego Comic-Con. I think that's smart because a lot of the people who are interested in what's going on at Comic-Con are people who are able to get a ticket and go out to San Diego for it. So I think it's a smart way to test the waters and see how people will react to a virtual convention. New York Comic-Con, I think, is going to be entertaining the same type of thing, although they've never usually had the big movie events there, especially the live action movies. That's usually been more of a TV and animation convention. Having been to it more times than I can count over the years, that one's always a bit with the TV and animation stuff, and I think that they're in a good position to do that because TV is a lot easier to sort of go virtual with sometimes too. I think we'll be back in business in 2021, because by that time I'm hoping that the science will catch up with the needs.
I am hoping too. What are some of the new upcoming things you're going to be posting on your pages and things at digitaltrends.com?
Oh, well, right now I'm in full-on mode looking forward to a lot of the movies that hopefully will come out down the road. Hopefully, you know, I who knows at this stage, but doing a lot of, you know, writing about Tenet and Bill and Ted, which I'm extremely excited about, Bill and Ted Face the Music, and Wonder Woman and all the superhero stuff, and as well as some of these weird things coming out. We've got, you know, Hamilton coming out in a movie form on Disney Plus, which I'm really excited about. I caught the touring show up here in the Capital Region, and I'm excited to see it with the original cast. There's just a lot of stuff coming out.
There is, and I hope it comes out soon, and I hope we're back in indoor movie theater soon. Rick Marshall, it has been a pleasure chatting with you today here on Cinema Stories, and I hope we're back at critic screenings very soon. Best to you and your family, and thank you so much for being on this episode today.
Jackson, this has been fantastic. I always love talking movies with you. This has been a joy and just a bright spot in an otherwise sort of downtime for a lot of us here. This has been very nice to chat movies with you again.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Stay positive. Stay well, everybody. Everybody listening. And check out Rick, Twitter at Rick Marshall, and at digitaltrends.com, contributing editor for the site. For more, go to lights-camera-jackson.com. Follow me on Twitter at LCJ Reviews and Instagram at lightscamjackson. We'll be back with another episode of the Cinema Stories podcast very soon. Stay well. I'm Lights Camera Jackson. Thanks for listening.